You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 79, Big Boy Trump. Today on the podcast, Michael and I are joined by special guest, Sadie Vadney, radio student and all-around great person. She joined us to talk about last Friday's announcement that the Trump administration healthcare reform bill was flat-out rejected, and to talk a little bit about what that means and why Canadians are so obsessed with American news. And we talked about WikiLeaks, who says they have iPhone exploit information. So stay tuned to hear that discussion. And now the show. When everything is broken. This week, we have a special guest with us today, Sadie Vadney.
Did I get your name right? They'll wear it out.
Okay. And so why don't you tell us who you are and why are you here?
I don't know. Why am I? There's free beer.
The door was unlocked and you just walked right in.
I just walked on in. I saw some cats and thought, you know what?
We have a literal open door policy.
That's where I need to be tonight.
Yeah.
Doing radio school, just working at a theater. That's my life right now. And now I'm doing a podcast here. So
nice. Well, thank you for joining us.
My
so what's
pleasure.
Going on, Michael? What are we
Well,
are we talking
I thought
about?
I'd start the episode with a quote from the best-selling novel of all time, The Art of the Deal. Deliver the goods. You can't con people, at least not for long. You can create excitement, you can do wonderful promotion and get all kinds of press, and you can throw in a little hyperbole. But if you don't deliver the goods, people will eventually catch on.
I'm not sure what kind of accent that was supposed to be.
I was trying to be Trump.
A little bit of a southern accent slipped in there.
It kind of went all over the place. Anyways.
It feels like dictated, but not read.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he didn't write it. This other guy wrote it, and he's actually had interviews where he's called Trump a complete sociopath, megalomaniac, etc.
Those are good interviews.
But
and the context for this is
the
because
context
today.
For this is because today the long-awaited repeal and replace of Obamacare was resoundingly slain by falling on its own sword. So the Republicans attempting to pass their absurd replacement for Obamacare, or the Affordable Health Care Act, as it should be called, which is because that is its actual name. Their attempt to replace it, they didn't have enough votes, basically. So for those who aren't aware, the Republican replacement plan was effectively the same as Obamacare, except it had a number of small changes that basically amounted to kill the poor. And what that means is they would have taken away coverage for over 25 million Americans right away, basically. And they were adding, like, the first version of the bill just did that, and it would have cost more money, and people would have lost coverage. So that in and of itself was terrible. But then a bunch of Republicans said, oh, this doesn't go far enough. We're not going to vote for it. We want it to be more cruel, if you can imagine that.
It's hard to imagine.
Is that
that's
verbatim?
For sure.
There are Republicans who are on record basically saying it doesn't go far enough. So, yeah. I mean, we want it to be more cruel, not in so many words, but...
But in so many words. Yeah.
So, they attempted to appease those Republicans by adding more changes including removing essential healthcare benefits. And just last night, they slashed the protection for pre-existing conditions. So if you had cancer or something like that, you had a heart attack, oh, we can't treat you now. You have a pre-existing condition. Oops. Coverage denied. That whole mess that we had 8 years ago in the States, that would have come back.
They were looking at changing some of the policies for that in Canada too, because it's just entirely unfair.
It's just a bad way to run healthcare.
It is. I'm not going to argue with that. But there is a quote from Trump today. Actually, I thought that was interesting. He said, "Quote." It was a learning experience, and apparently he tried to spin the setback as an opportunity for a potential bipartisan bill in the future.
Okay, yeah.
But, I mean, what else are you going to say, right? Are you going to publicly say, deflated?
So, basically, there was no way this bill would pass. The number of Republicans that opposed it, so...
It's too extreme, even for those Republicans.
Well, no, that's the thing. There were the Republicans where it didn't go far enough for them. And they tried to appease them, but they still couldn't get enough of them on side. And then there were Republicans that were going to vote no because their constituents basically told them at the town halls, if you vote for this, we will vote you out in 2018.
Okay.
So they were too scared to vote yes. And then the other Republicans didn't want to vote yes because they thought it should have gone further. So there were like... 20 to 25 Republicans that were basically like, we're not voting for this thing. And it's funny because a few days ago, Trump basically made this ultimatum. He's like, you're going to vote for this thing or I'm going to get you voted out in 2018. And they were like,
that's a threat.
Yeah. Okay. And just because of that, he lost 10 votes.
That's not surprising.
Yeah. Well, plus you can't tell your followers, like, damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yesterday, he issued another ultimatum that was basically like, you're going to vote and pass this thing, or I'm just going to drop it and move on to the next thing.
Also, don't make public ultimatums.
Yeah, right? It's like, you're the fucking president of the United States, and it's like, I'm making an ultimatum. You have to do this or else.
Or else I'm going to take my toys home.
What? What? Oh, speaking of toys, yesterday when they decided to postpone the vote, guess what Trump was doing? They had trucks out on the White House lawn.
Oh, I saw that.
And he got to play with one of the trucks and honk the horn.
Honk
Ain't
the horn a
that
whole
exciting.
Lot.
Big boy Trump got to play with a big boy truck. Yay.
Yeah, I know. I saw that photo floating around.
And then he went back into the White House and was like, yeah, let's make some calls. Let's get this vote going. And then a reporter, not one of his aides, not somebody in his inner circle, a reporter had to tell him, oh, they actually canceled the vote for today. You failed.
You know, coming from the technology angle, I haven't heard anything whether or not they're going to make changes to the website where you can actually buy healthcare. That was all part of the Affordable Healthcare Act.
I don't think that even factored into anything they were trying to do.
Okay.
Like, they probably ignored that.
I don't think they've thought that far ahead.
I thought the whole idea, too, behind... Well, one of the things that he wanted was, didn't he want to create a free market for more competitive...
All Republicans want a free market. They always want that.
But they say that. In theory, it sounds great.
Oh, sure.
But it never,
when
like,
they
in practice,
say it, it
really,
sounds great.
It never really works out.
The thing is, and I think John Oliver covered this, or maybe Samantha Bee, or both of them, but one of the big, big things that Republicans are all gung-ho about is, let's remove the borders where... insurance companies can come in and let's have it cross state lines and stuff. And then the insurance companies can like have a monopoly and compete and fight each other. But the thing is, to have insurance coverage in a region requires a massive amount of infrastructure. It's about building connections with doctors, hospitals, pharmacies, everything. That takes time and a lot of money. And the insurance companies do not want to make that kind of investment if they don't have to.
No, of course
not. So even if they remove these imaginary boundaries where the insurance companies can't go outside of, they're still not going to expand quickly enough or vastly enough in a way that would actually create this perfect system of competition where you can get a good deal. Because for the first 5 or 6 years, they'll just stay where they are and try and figure out where they're going to expand, if they even decide to expand. So the whole premise that the minute they remove those boundaries, you're going to get this amazing competitive market where you can get the best deal, it's not going to happen. It was never going to happen.
Looking at all the stuff that he talked about in the campaign promises, this just reminds me, like, that for me, the takeaway is like, and then this is not just him, but so many politicians where they talk a good talk and walk a good walk, but once they get in there,
yeah,
you realize it's not that easy. You can't just snap your fingers,
yeah,
and do what you want. There's so much red tape. The way the system is manufactured, it's so complicated.
Mm. Yeah, so kind of like Christy Clark and her liquefied natural gas promises.
Yeah, we can look inside our own country and see those problems too. It just happens, and often they have good intentions, but the reality is, even Trump has even said, like, with the healthcare reform thing being rejected, well, it was a learning lesson. It turns out being a president is a freaking hard thing.
I sort of feel bad for like the mooks that did vote for him because he wasn't another politician. And
he's an
now
outsider. That was the appealing.
He was the
that
outsider,
was the whole
right?
appealing aspect of his campaign and his rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Turns out he's just another politician, and like all these people feel really slighted, and like he lied to us. I'm like, he's used to
as a business guy with his own companies being in charge of his own destiny,
a business.
Doing what he wants with his own businesses. But of course, yeah.
Except
dealing with policy when you know nothing about it. You can't just walk in there, hey guys, I'm here, so I guess you better listen to me and do what
and
I want.
Being the president isn't being the CEO of a country.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he totally misunderstood that.
He even sucks at that. He's had 6 bankruptcies. How is that being a good businessman? It's not.
Well,
he's never been a good businessman.
Can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs, right?
Yeah, but these eggs are people.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, I didn't invent the expression.
But yeah, he wrote a freaking book about negotiating, wrote air quotes,
yeah.
And he's not even following that. So it's like, just going back to the healthcare, some of the rhetoric today was, Trump tried so hard to make this happen. He made so many phone calls and he really worked for it. And it's like, no, he called like 5 people over the course of 3 weeks and then got distracted by a truck, and that's about it. Do you know what Obama did to get Obamacare passed? He spent an entire year talking with both parties, having meetings, consultations, going out and having town halls, talking to American citizens about what they wanted, on and on and on, discussions, panels, debates. A year it took him doing all of that to finally get it passed. And even then, he had to heavily compromise his vision because he wanted the public option, which would have given everyone basically the equivalent of MSP, like a cheap, affordable healthcare package.
Yeah, pay
that
60
you'd pay
bucks a month. And
a low premium
subsidized.
For. Yeah, he wanted to do that. But because the Republicans wouldn't budge on it, he had to get rid of it to make sure that the whole thing passed, which is terrible, but he had to do it. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gotten anything passed. So he made that sacrifice. And would America be better off if they had done it? Yeah. and hopefully the Democrats will actually now submit a decent improvement plan. Like, hell, I want to see them go all in and just be like, okay, let's bring in single-payer healthcare. Let's do it. Let's give every American coverage right now.
As a quick interjection, only British Columbia has MSP, so I'm not sure it's a totally fair comparison because the rest of Canada functions without it.
Oh, really?
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
I just heard Ontario had it.
Ontario might come on the show more often. Most of Canada doesn't have MSP. We're the only ones paying it. And that's the thing. Christy Clark is saying like, oh, I'm totally going to get rid of it so that we have the same like accessibility that the rest of Canada has. But I think she promised it last time too.
Yeah. Well, I think isn't that already in the works now with this whole new budget? They're slashing MSP premiums by like 40% or 50% or whatever.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it on my monthly invoice.
Yeah.
So I have a question. I want to hear from Sadie about this, and then we can bounce to Michael. But why is it? I mean, we know as Canadians living in this country, we're bombarded with news about what's going on down south, and especially I think with this whole presidency, it's fascinating and it seems to consume a lot of our time and a lot of our interest. But why are we so fascinating? Why are we so fascinated with what's going on down there? Why do we spend so much time, you know, following everything that's going on in that country and not so much?
I almost feel like it's
overshadowing what's going on here too, to some extent.
It is. And I think that's like Canadian Americanization. You know, North America as a global power, we tend to get sort of lumped in when you're talking about blanket media, right? And Canadian politics is boring. A lot of our demographics, like a lot of our population, we don't have the people in order to generate the same sort of buzz. And then our politicians are boring. They have boring promises. You don't have a Ted Cruz of Canada, right? We don't have a Zodiac killer. We have Justin Trudeau.
So it's the entertainment factor, really.
It's the entertainment factor. This is the closest that I've seen Canadian politics coming to American politics was Justin Trudeau and the social media campaign that he ran, which was pretty parallel to Donald Trump's.
Well, I mean, Justin Trudeau couldn't be more the complete polar opposite of Trump, but he has become a celebrity because people have like basically objectified him.
And he got voted in the same way.
Right.
He was the young politician who had an Instagram account. And I think that really spoke to young voters that could relate on that level.
Sure.
And I mean, he's been largely disappointing for a lot of people now, but
yeah, I think, you know,
at the time he was the anti-politician.
Part of it, I'm sure this came into play, was just the name Trudeau, the history, you know, with his father too, which I'm sure for older Canadians that have maybe at least know about him or maybe were in that time period when he was in office, but I'm sure that played a factor in some people that voted for Justin.
Oh yeah,
like, well, you know
it does paint
cut
a
from the same
picture,
cloth, so he must be
I mean, Trudeau wasn't the best prime minister either, but he had
there
a vision.
Is, that's the thing
that
with
was
these,
less
these roles. There is no best, right? I mean, is there really? It's like an impossibly difficult job. Like, and I actually like on a personal level, like I like Justin Trudeau as a person. I think I like his, how passionate he is about Canada and that he fights for it. And yeah, he makes mistakes, and they haven't lived up to all the promises of their campaign, but that just happens with democracy. Like, democracy is so slow moving. And I think I haven't heard anyone explain this better than Barack Obama when he was on Mark Maron's podcast. Was it a year or 2 years ago now? And where he really went into great length about democracy, that it's really like an incremental thing. Like, the innovation happens on such a slow moving incremental scale that it's really, When you're a blue collar worker and you're concerned about what's like your own well-being, what's happening in your family, what's happening at work, you're worried about taking care of yourself. You're not going to, it's hard to keep track of every little thing that that the current regime is doing. But when you actually look back on, and I'm not saying Obama was flawless, but when you look back at and add up all of the actual improvements that actually equaled good positive results, when you see all that, you like start to realize like, yeah, that he did make a lot of good changes, but also a lot of people don't see that either. And I'm sure that is the case in Canada as well.
Yeah.
And possibly other countries.
I think there's like localized politics and then there's global politics. And that's the thing that when people look at people like Trudeau, like he's doing a lot of great things for, like he's doing social media campaigns for equal rights and he's, you know, he's a feminist. Everybody can recognize him as that. But then Canada also sells weapons to oppressive regimes. So it's sort of... You can't have your cake and eat it too. And Obama was the same way. America and Canada, when you look at democracy, it's, and that's the thing, this is me getting a little off topic, but I feel like democracy at that is sort of like face value. And that's what Canadians accept.
I'd say that's a pretty accurate way to explain it. I mean, what's the media's role in all of this? I mean, they obviously have some level of responsibility. I mean, do you think the media in this country, like, are they doing their job? Can more be done? I mean, how is this being, what is your perspective? How are you seeing, like, the CBC, for example, covering all of the stuff that's going on in this country? Are they doing, do you think they're doing a good enough job?
I think the CBC is doing as well as they can with the money that they have. I'm not saying like the CBC has to be a whistleblower for it to be effective. I think we have other media outlets for that. And especially because CBC is a public service, you can't really expect them to be too subjective, you know?
Sure.
But
yeah, I mean, we don't really have any like equivalents of WikiLeaks here. We don't have whistleblowers.
Yeah. We don't have an Art Bell in Manitoba, you know?
Let's not glorify WikiLeaks. They are now a tool of the Russian government. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Oh, I do.
They are, you have some inside knowledge here?
Oh, no. It's patently obvious. They released information about Hillary Clinton and released nothing about Donald Trump. So that right there tells you something.
Well, maybe nothing exists.
Oh, there's so much.
He's squeaky clean, dude.
So
he's
got to
be squeaky clean, exactly.
They have been in the pocket of Vladimir Putin for quite a while.
Yeah, but there's no actual evidence of this.
No, there's no actual evidence, but their actions speak for themselves. Let's put it that way.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to fault you for drawing those kind of conclusions, but, and it may seem reasonable, but I mean, until there's actual evidence, I mean, I don't know. I'm always hesitant to really say for
just
certain
like
about those kinds of things.
Recently, Gavald, the CIA spy stuff.
Them? What is in it for them?
Oh, nothing's in it for them. They're just being paid by Russia to do it. The intent is to embarrass
that.
The American intelligence community.
I don't know if I believe that.
It's supposed
that.
To embarrass the American intelligence community by revealing all of their secrets.
It doesn't sound far-fetched. I could see why they wouldn't, because obviously the American intelligence agency doesn't think very highly of them.
Russia employs a ton of hackers who would run in the same circles as the WikiLeaks people. Could those people be, in fact, one and the same?
Yes, it is possible. But there is no evidence, so therefore, I'm not going to say anything further on that matter.
Okay.
I don't give them enough credence
Vlad
in the first
paying
place.
You, Alex?
No, I cannot confirm or deny anything.
He's beet red right now.
Well, it's just really warm in here, that's all. I swear it's just the temperature in the room.
You're sure it's not... Red
the
fever.
Red curtain.
Let's not go there. So, I mean, Michael, what is your perspective on this? Do you think Canadian media is doing a good enough job on reporting? And even going further than that, do you have any kind of perception about like how well informed Canadians are? Like, how many people actually know really what's going on?
I think generally a lot of Canadians are misinformed. I think a lot of the time democracy tends to let us down. Generally, I think we drift towards the right direction. But overall, there are a lot of missteps. For example, the transit referendum here in BC. Voting yes for that would have meant vastly improved service, a bunch of new transit lines, and the BC Taxpayers Federation spewed a bunch of bullshit and lies and tricked everyone into thinking that TransLink is this horribly mismanaged company where all the money goes to the greedy fat cats at the top and they don't care about providing decent service and everything's awful and you shouldn't give them any more money.
Well, it's clearly
not. Well, Harper did the same thing with voter reform.
Yeah. So,
but we're getting, BC is getting a huge infusion of money from the federal government to do a 10-year, there's a 10-year plan.
In theory, yes, but
it's been approved as far as
the provincial government isn't matching it. The provincial government is basically refusing to go along with it.
Because I thought that they had already approved this. They have a 10-year transit plan, and now they're planning what they're gonna, how they're gonna roll this out.
The problem with that is the provincial governments have to match the funds, and our provincial government is refusing to do that currently.
Well, maybe there's no money in the bank.
Oh, there's so much money. So much money that they can offer suddenly a ton of improvements to healthcare and education and that fake second mortgage for first-time buyers.
Yep.
All of that is just so great and sunny, and let's just own the bridge, everyone. Yay!
Yeah, I haven't been following it very closely, although I did hear this week that they were talking about building a few light rail options, I think, and was it Langley or Surrey? I mean, have you been following this?
They're looking
this?
At options. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially out in Langley because so many people can't afford houses in Vancouver that they're branching out. So Mission and Langley, they're all looking at light rail.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why we're not doing SkyTrain. Like, why aren't we doing SkyTrain consistently everywhere?
Well, look at what it costs to build.
Is it more expensive?
Like, I still lived out in Maple Ridge in 2007 when they started building this. And now it's 2017 and they've just finished it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
And that wasn't even a 10-year plan. I forget what they pitched for it, but it wasn't 10 years.
That whole project was mismanaged and not... And they could have done better.
A lot of infrastructure projects in BC are mismanaged.
That's true. Yeah. That is very true.
And not to mention they ran into issues digging through the mountain. All those sinkholes, that set them back a lot of time.
And the protests.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, who knows, like, from an engineering perspective.
They did actually finish under budget, though.
No way.
Which was surprising.
You're lying to me.
I'm not. They actually finished under budget because the contractor basically had it written into their contract. There was this thing, like a clause, and because of the sinkholes, they had to pay for the extra time it took.
That's amazing.
We didn't actually lose any money on it.
That's a smart deal.
Yeah.
Do we know by what margin?
It was like, I think they were under by like maybe 3 or 4 million, something like that. Like, it wasn't a ton, but it was very clearly under budget.
That's enough when you're considering a public works project like this.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, all the increased fares, they're laughing, basically. Like, that was an insanely good contract. Because, that happened. And then it was like, oh, shit, we have to do this for no pay because we signed it.
Nerds.
Yeah. So, that turned out pretty well. And they're now hoping to start work on the Broadway Corridor project. So,
I saw the signs for that.
What is that about? Because I haven't really looked into
that. That is like the Evergreen Line, except it goes to UBC.
So it's
SkyTrain. Along Broadway. Yeah. So what they would do is they would extend the Millennium Line from Commercial all the way to UBC along Broadway.
Why didn't they do that 10 years ago?
It would be nice.
Yeah.
It's impossible to get out there.
I know.
It's very
and we have
it is very
tourist
difficult.
Attractions up there.
Yeah,
like
they've been
Museum
talking about it for a really long time, and now they've finally got a plan together. Well, they had a plan They had a plan a few years ago. That was one of the things that the transit referendum would have funded, but oops, everyone voted no. So
if they voted at all.
Yeah. So now that there's all this extra funding coming in from the federal government, and hopefully they can get more funding from whoever replaces Christy Clark, please, for the love of God, let's vote her out. Please, people, come on.
Okay, I want to jump back to WikiLeaks here, because we're getting a little too hyper-local for most of the people that probably subscribe to this podcast. But so Apple says that WikiLeaks, who apparently has some CIA documents, Apple says that these documents are old, and the exploits that they supposedly say they have are or have been already fixed. So just for some context, basically WikiLeaks has a bunch of documents saying that they found a bunch of iOS related exploits, and Apple is countering that, saying no you didn't. So what is actually going on here?
So WikiLeaks got a ton of CIA classified intel stuff from Russia, just throwing that out there. It was, as I said again, it was intended to embarrass the American intelligence infrastructure by revealing all of the shit that they can do. And among the documents was a bunch of stuff about how they could hack into Apple computers, including iPhones, and they were using zero-day exploits and all this other stuff to kind of get in there, hack open the firmware, keep it running. But the thing is, all of it requires physical access to the device. They can't just do it over the internet.
Yeah, that's kind of a
But moot one point. Of them was about getting into the factory and doing it, but that was from a while ago. And Apple's correct, a lot of the exploits are for much older iPhones. There was one that was for the iPhone 3G.
All of this stuff is really stupid, because even I've seen this on CBC, like not too long ago, a couple months ago, they were talking about how, you know, that you can hook up this piece of hardware to an iPhone and bypass lock screen, and they did it with like an iPhone 4.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're talking about like how many generations, like 5-year-old phones. Of course, those things are way less secure.
Well, it depends. Do you recall the San Bernardino attack?
Yes,
and the
I
whole
do.
Thing with the FBI asking Apple to open the iPhone?
Of course.
So after Apple told them no and they lost the court case, they went to an Israeli company called Cellebrite. And Cellebrite offers a number of solutions for unlocking devices. And I believe they are able to open up to an iPhone 5S, maybe a 6.
Hello, this is Alex Knight from Hologram Radio, here to tell you about a fun new podcast that we recently launched called Serial Sommelier. Each week, David Kahlo and a guest select a random episode of a much beloved 1970s and 1980s Saturday morning cartoon series, review the episode, have some laughs, and of course, pair the perfect sugar cereal with it. Subscribe to Serial Sommelier today in iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and of course, wherever you can find your favorite podcasts.
Basically, the new secure enclave in the 6S onward is too encrypted to do anything with it. Like,
so I figured
the newer chips are much more difficult crack open.
I figured
open.
The Touch ID would have been strong enough to, like on the 5S, because I know a lot of those exploits are pre-iPhone 5S.
The first 5S did have exploitable things.
Yeah.
The 6 got rid of a lot of them, but it may be vulnerable still.
And then the 6S had a completely new Touch ID sensor.
Yeah, the 6S, all of the sandboxing they did with this new secure element in the A9 chip, you're not getting in.
I guess you don't have to worry about this, Sadie, right? Because you have an Android phone without... You don't have a touch... Do you have a fingerprint sensor on there?
This is an iPhone 4S.
Oh, 4S. Dear. Okay.
Yeah. It can crack that thing wide open.
Actually, it is cracked wide open.
Oh,
you
dear.
Can see.
It literally is cracked wide open.
Well.
Yeah, I have a 6 that I could bring in and get fixed, but it's going to cost me like $200 to unlock it and have the screen fixed. And my friend had kept it in her back pocket, so it's actually... bent.
I had the old aluminum.
Yes, yep. I have a 6S now, but I did have the 6, which had a weaker aluminum case. They fixed that on the 6S. It's much stronger. Like, how many times stronger is that, the new aluminum,
the 7000 series? The Series 7000 aluminum is about three times stronger than the previous aluminum.
I mean, not that I said, you know, that was a weird thing, just as an aside. Even though I had put my phone in my back pocket, I had never actually sat on that phone once.
Hmm.
And I think the only reason why is because I had, and I still wear fairly tight jeans. But when I had that phone, I had even tighter jeans, and I always put them in that tiny front pocket.
Hmm.
So I'm thinking all those times sitting down, that pressure being in
it's
the
like
pocket.
Hit you in the gut.
No, well, I actually had the smaller, I have the plus now, but I had the smaller one before. So
not saying you really have a gut or worry, anything, just,
but,
you
yeah,
know.
Thanks. But no, that was a weird one, but I know I'm not the only one that was affected by the whole bendy iPhone situation.
Ben Gates.
Because
we have
hashtag,
to add gate to everything.
Ben Gate, as they're saying.
Ugh.
So anyway, so Apple has counteracted this whole thing and saying basically that they've already fixed these issues. I don't know if they said they fixed them in the current release of iOS or if it was public betas, but that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, basically a bunch of these exploits are old and they don't really have any bearing on the current devices. I think there was something about a 2012 or 2013 MacBook Air, but yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like a non-issue. Like, and it also seems like naive that these people would put that much time into hacking like old technology and still thinking that they would make a penny out of Apple.
Yeah. I mean, but Apple is actually, or don't they participate in those pwn-to-own contests?
They
now?
Do now. Although
they've taken security seriously for quite some time, more so than most companies. But now it seems like, you know, now that Steve Jobs is gone and like they've gone through all these changes, they're really upping the game in the security department. I mean, who did they hire? What was that recent hire?
Jonathan Zdarsky.
Yeah, that guy is a really brilliant security researcher. I don't know if you've heard of him, Sadie. That was a good hire for them.
Could I take it back for a moment? What did you call that? Pwn-to-own?
It's called Pwn-to-own.
Yeah, it's a competition that happens every year in Las Vegas. Basically, if you can hack the device, you win it. You own it.
That's fantastic.
And once you get in.
Yeah, and companies, they have these bounties, so if you can find a exploit and hack it in a certain amount of time, they'll like, they're big bounties, like tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, so Google has really big bounties. Apple doesn't, which is a problem.
It's still the case.
Theirs are still quite low.
Okay, what is Apple paying? What is Google paying?
I don't know the exact numbers. Google pays somewhere in the range of like 20 to 30,000, depending on what kind of bug it is. Like if it's a core level kernel exploit for Android, that'd be like the maximum amount, because that basically represents I can go into Android with this one thing and everything is mine. So those kinds of bugs, they will pay you the top amount.
So there's some pretty good incentive to find an exploit for that. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's fantastic incentivization.
That's the whole reason that they do that, because the thing is, if they don't, some third party will. And there are companies like Cellebrite that pay top dollar for these sorts of exploits, because if they have an exploit that the company doesn't know about, they can use that to provide law enforcement with tools to crack these devices open. So they will actually pay upwards of $1 million for exploits.
Wow.
In fact, I believe Cellebrite's bounty for any core level exploit on iOS for current hardware is like $5 million or something insane, because they can make all of that money back and way more if they own that exploit and can sell it to law enforcement, because that tool, like the program that they use, I think they charge per unlock. So they basically have a completely locked in audience, because they just grab these exploits and go, okay, you want to get into these criminals' phones? You pay us this much.
That's
every
so
time.
That's so skeezy.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great little racket they have going on. So the whole reason Google pays top dollar is so that hopefully these security researchers are decent enough that they will go to Google instead of these other companies and be decently compensated for it.
I think that word decent, I'm not really sure that comes into play.
Like, well, if companies like Cellebrite are offering $1 million and Google's offering 30,000,
yeah,
morality kind of comes into play at that point, because if you're like, woo, $1 million, I don't care, yeah, you'll go with them. But if you're like, you know what, this should really be patched so that people can't get their phones cracked open, I'll take the 30 grand. You're a good person.
Fair enough. Well, it's good that those, you know, those exploits are, I assume they're not, they don't divulge the information of the exploit publicly, right? Because it's done in a
not usually,
private
no.
environment.
Yes.
Then they give the opportunity to the company to actually
fix
it.
They are closely held secrets.
Right. Now, for unfortunately, people don't always do that. There is
a schedule for zero-day disclosures. So there is kind of a system that security researchers generally abide by. Sometimes, as you were about to say, they do break the rules and just go, here's this bug. But the way it's supposed to work is you do the research, you disclose to the company, and then within 30 days, you announce it. Unless the company says we are going to issue a patch within or just after that 30-day window. So assuming that the company cooperates and is like, okay, we're going to fix this, it only gets disclosed after it's fixed. Yeah.
I've seen a couple of times where, like, I kind of don't blame them, though, when they find an exploit, they make every effort to contact people, and then that company just doesn't respond.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you going to do? Wait 6 months for it? I mean,
yeah, that's where it breaks down, because yeah, some of these companies, sometimes you try to contact them, then they're just like crickets. So these exploits, they're just like, well, fuck it. And they go, hey, everyone, watch out for this. And then that company, they fix it real quick.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Like the Heartbleed bug that was affecting servers back in 2015. That got fixed pretty quickly.
That was gnarly. What did that do again?
It was an exploit in OpenSSL that allowed someone to run a man-in-the-middle attack on all HTTPS requests using that library, which is pretty much the entire internet. So quickly, they issued a patch for OpenSSL, and anyone running it on their server had to update. Otherwise, they would still be affected. So, a lot of terminals were opened that day, and a lot of, depending on your flavor of Linux, apt-get update was typed, or something to that effect.
Well, I think we should close out this episode with some final thoughts. I mean, we talked about quite a lot. We did talk about the announcement that the healthcare reform bill was turned down, and Trump is rather deflated right now. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about democracy as a whole and whether or not the media is doing its job in Canada to even report what's going on. And the security stuff. But yeah, do you guys have any other final closing thoughts on all this stuff?
Hmm.
I mean, are you following Canadian news more than American news, or the other way around right now, or what's going on with you?
I mean, it's almost impossible to avoid American news.
Right.
Just with how chaotic all of this is.
I mean, but you could purposely do that, but the thing is like, stuff that happens down there tends to affect us in some way.
Yeah.
So it is important to kind of know what's
definitely
going on.
I would say, in terms of following U.S. politics versus Canadian politics, it's probably about 70-30. I do have quite a lot of American friends and people that I follow, so I get a lot of that news on Twitter, but I also follow a number of key accounts that deliver Canadian political news. So I kind of get that perfect mix where I see all the Trump chaos, but then occasionally I get in, oh, what the hell are the conservatives doing in their leadership race? Uh-oh, that doesn't look good. And, oh, what promise did Trudeau break now? Things like that. So I think I have a pretty comfortable mix in my timeline of Canadian versus American. I could probably stand to be a little more informed about provincial politics. Like, I know generally all the bad shit Christy Clark's done and all the stuff that we need to fix, but
well, it's because there's a lot that kind always, of she's me. In the limelight, right?
Yeah.
She kind of has to be. So you can't help but hear about
with stuff her happens. Propaganda wing, Global News.
She's also a piece of garbage. It's just my opinion.
Yeah, I know she's not entirely popular right now.
Yeah, and Global News is just like, you want us to run what puff piece, Christy? Because
well, I mean, she used to be on CKNW.
Yeah,
right.
Like she's kind of in there. So yeah, I feel like.
And I must admit, too, that I haven't been following local politics all that closely.
Which
I probably should be doing a better
you
job.
You should be doing because the provincial the election is, yep.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It I've already
next
registered.
Month.
Good for you.
Of course, the problem with all this is, where is the NDP?
I know. They've sort of been missing, eh?
Yeah.
Like, NDP is MIA.
You don't see John Horgan. You don't see any of them. They're kind of invisible. Part of that I blame on the fact that, like I said, Global News and a bunch of those outlets, they're in her pocket. So they're not going to go out of their way to report what the NDP's up to.
Yeah, I think they're doing a lot of like...
Talk
on the other hand, the NDP isn't doing a great job of marketing either.
Yeah, no. that's very true. I mean, we could talk... That's like a whole other episode about issue. I have my own things.
And we'll
like
probably have
that.
A post-mortem after the election's over. I don't know.
Yeah.
If anyone's interested.
all I'll say is that I definitely miss Jacqueline.
Oh, that's definitely.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know anyone. I haven't seen anyone with that level of like charisma and charm and earnestness.
He was our Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
You know? He was he was an amazing man, and it was so hard to watch him lose.
Yeah, I mean, even if you didn't vote or support the NDP, it was hard not to like that guy.
Yeah. And they really had a shot. Like, they didn't win, but they got a lot of seats. And if they had maintained that momentum and he hadn't died, he would have been prime minister right now. Probably. Yeah.
Well, it really feels like we had Leighton in the light and then we entered the darkest timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to say when it all started going downhill.
Okay. I'd like to hear from Sadie. So my question to you is, how closely are you following? What's your ratio of Canadian to American news?
Right now,
why?
I'm trying to do a 50-50. I've decreased my feed of American news. I've stopped listening to a lot of my American podcasts, and I'm trying to replace that with Canadian content because we are entering a huge political season and I want to be more informed, or at least as informed as I was coming into the US one, which wasn't like totally immersive or anything, but enough that I could hold my own, right? Mm. If someone were to ask me something, I think it's important that you know what's going on in your own country, and a lot of Canadians don't. So hopefully, you know, I can keep that up because unfortunately we don't have sensationalized politics. We have really boring politics. Even the articles that I open.
Which is probably why a lot of Americans don't really know what's going on in Canada.
No, they know Trudeau. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Joe Trudeau, as they like to say.
Oh, they don't, do they?
That happened one time,
that
and
was,
then everyone joked that's his evil twin.
That was a mistake. I think that was an honest mistake.
His evil twin, Joe Trudeau, with a goatee. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yes, happened once, and now look at where we're at. So, yeah, trying to be more informed, trying to keep up with it, because it's great if you can, like, I'm going to be into Canadian politics, and then it lasts for a week. So, if I can see it to the end, you know.
Yeah, the U.S. stuff is just too tempting. It's like you're reading all this stuff about Canada and then suddenly, wait, what did Trump say?
Well, thank you very much for coming out and joining us today, Sadie.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today.
Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.